Welcome to Kyperion Commentary. I'm your host, Yuri Brito, and this is episode 66. On this episode, we welcome back our dear friend and writer for Kyperion Commentary, Dustin Messer. Dustin is the author of the most recent Secular Sacraments, Finding Grace in the World and Sin in the Church. Dustin, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Yuri. How you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you. And I heard recently, I may be wrong in the source here, but I heard recently that your book was sort of nominated as one of the better publications of the year. What magazine was that, Dustin?
Marvin Olasky.
Marvin, yes.
Commended it, in World Magazine, which was very kind of him. And you know Marvin Olasky, he's not the person, I'm glad I didn't know he was reading the book beforehand because the intimidating character, so.
Yes, he is. I think I met him once and a man with very high standards on writing. So anyway, that's a really wonderful treat for you. Congratulations.
Thank you, man.
Dustin, I want to talk about your most recent article. You're a writer also for Breakpoint, and your most recent article caught my attention, and it's entitled From Christendom to Consumerism on the New Priests of Modernity. And as I said, it summarized in many ways how I felt for a long time, Dustin, about modern views of dying, let's phrase it that way. Yeah. And your opening quote from The Telegraph is very telling. I want to read it for our listeners. You said, quoting The Telegraph, that 80% decline in religious funerals as mourners opt for golf courses and zoos over churches. How did we get to this point?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's almost two different stories. One story being the decline of Christendom, as I outline in the piece. The church has just been shrinking and shrinking, obviously, in influence and just in people's imagination that this is where we should turn in a time of grief. The study that the article is based on was specifically focused on Great Britain, but obviously there's a correlation in America as well. So that's one side of the story. And the other side of the story is the rise of consumerism. So on one hand, you have people stop looking to the church, but the problem is people are always looking for identity somewhere. So that place that they used to get their identity from, their story from, the church, once it dissipates, what fills that role? And interestingly, I think if you had have asked a traditional reformed evangelical type Christian 30, 40 years ago, what will take that place? I think we all would have said the state, and the state has in many ways, but what we, I think, underappreciated or underestimated because, right, this conservative, reformed-ish evangelicalist were, you know, tend to be quite conservative. So we had this sort of high view of the market, right, and low view of the state. And we thought, well, the state will come in and be this new priest of modernity. Instead, what's happened is what I call the institutions of consumerism, things like shopping malls, fast food, et cetera. This has come in and given just a heavy weight in terms of giving narrative and context to people's lives. Way more than I think we expect is not to say that the state isn't intrusive and weakening of intermediating institutions and so forth, but these institutions of entertainment, of consumerism have had a profound effect on people. So that's the other side of the story is where people aren't looking, the church, but then where people are looking for meaning and identity. And the upshot of the piece is they're looking to stuff to consume, but as the funeral arrangements of folks are telling us, it's not so much that they are consuming the things as much as the things are consuming them, quite literally, when you scatter your ashes in a mall parking lot or you put your ashes in a firework display or something like that. They're quite literally consuming you, which of course is what's happening spiritually too.
Right. Yeah. In the 1970s and 80s and the 90s with the rise of the moral majority, there was this great fear of what they called statism.
Yeah.
And the impression I get from reading your piece and just from studying the issue over the last few years is that the state is not a very good storyteller, but the consumerist industry tells stories very well. And that seems to be the appeal. And I almost wonder what would Abraham Kuyper say if were he to explore this kind of powerful sphere in our society today. But one of the questions that comes to mind, Dustin, for you is that, as I mentioned, that this industry, this consumerist industry, is telling a very sexy story, a very attractive story. Develop that story for our listeners.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of times what we think is marketers are in the business of just trying to sell us a thing like a phone, a sweater, a pair of shoes, et cetera. And what we forget is that they're doing background work sort of collectively. The milieu of consumerism is doing some background work, which is they're setting a story up in which their product is the redeemer. And it can be sort of a collective project between McDonald's, Disney, Nike, et cetera. And the way it works is this. You were created, they will say, to be praised. You were created to feel attractive. You were created. I mean, you know, you could be deeper about it. You were created to be loved in a sense. And then they'll say, but there's a fall. There's a problem because every story has to have creation, fall, redemption, right? So they'll say the problem is the reason you aren't getting the attention that you deserve. The reason you're not as organized as you would like to be is because you don't, you're disorganized or whatever it is. They'll say, this is your problem. And then that thing that they are selling then becomes your redeemer. So in other words, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get you to invest your hope in a phone, which, man, I've been victim to so many times where I think, oh, my life is so scattered. And I think, okay, this app is going to help me like focus everything, or a membership to this gym is going to help me get more physically fit, or whatever it is. I'll like invest hope into it. And so it's no wonder. I mean, what we do with our bodies says something about where our hope is. And not to get too sidetracked, but as you know, I mean, the way relics became, came into existence in the early church is the Romans wanted to keep dead bodies out of the city. But the Christians had such profound hope for the physical bodies that they wanted to bring the bodies back into the city. And so they started carrying around, you know, it was a good thing to have like the, you know, the jawbone of some saint, some martyr, right? And so once marketers sell us a story of you were created to have the praise attention of the opposite sex, your problem is you're overweight, you're drab, you're whatever it is, so buy this thing. It's what the Bible calls an idol, right? We have an idol that is this given thing. As Christians, it behooves us to recognize this story of modernity, because when we come in and we insist to people, look, Jesus is your redeemer, they don't understand the underlying story of, number one, you were created to live in the presence of God, a faithful steward of the earth. Number two, the main thing wrong with you and indeed the world isn't a lack of education. It's not a lack of resources. It's not a lack of medical care. The main thing wrong with you and the world is sin, both in its sort of broken face and its rebellious face, both in tornadoes and in affairs. And until that sort of background work of re-narrativizing a culture in creation fall, only once that's done can the redeeming work of Jesus be heard as such.
That's a very, very interesting observation. It goes back to some of the things you've written in the past about secular sacraments, that once the classic biblical means of grace lose their role in the church, or once they are trivialized because of liberalism or whatever purposes, alternative sacraments seek to take its place. And so in this case, there is almost an eschatological dimension, because if you're putting your hope on anything that's not in Jesus, you have adopted a secular kind of eschatology, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a great book called Plugged In by the British theologian Dan Strange. Have you read anything by Dan Strangery?
No, I am very familiar with his name, but I haven't read anything in particular. Yeah.
Fascinating person. I mean, you know, he'll quote sort of Muslim philosophers. He'll quote Rushduni. He'll quote, I mean, just a very eclectic and thoughtful person, sort of thinking in the Kuiperian mold. Anyways, he has a book called Plugged In. And in that book, he talks a lot about how our habits sort of express where our view of redemption is, and sort of the eschatology of modernity. It's a really helpful book, and it just behooves us as pastors, but as church people, to think about, you know, say you have a student you work with. I teach at a secondary prep school, and whenever that student can't have something, whenever they can't have, you know, a new pair of shoes, or they can't have the most recent iPhone, we have to say, like, it's okay to be disappointed. It's okay to want something. Right. But whenever it just absolutely wrecks them, I don't think we can just go and sort of try to squash the desire for the thing, or worry about sort of the actions at that point. We have to say, man, this person, and I say student, it could be anybody, this person is living in a story that this object is going to be their redeemer. And so I think the first thing we have to do is recognize our job isn't just to have a hammer and squash sins like we're playing Hungry, Hungry Hippo. It's rather to take a step back and look at in my last article at Breakpoint before this one, I talked about how we have to be sort of gardeners and look at the whole ecosystem, the whole moral ecosystem of a person, the story the person is telling inside themselves that makes this thing so valuable to them. And so just in our own life, I mean, I really have to check whenever I don't get my way or I don't get a thing, to what degree does it hurt me? Am I just disappointed, or have I made that thing, whatever it is, and those things, you know, we tend to make them seem at least more sophisticated the older we get. You know, we typically don't cry when we can't get a new pair of shoes or a new phone or something, but we very easily could really be devastated when we don't get a new title at work, a promotion, a house, a car, some sort of identifier. And we have to do the hard work ourselves of telling that old, old story of creation, fall, redemption, the true story of the whole world, to our own selves, and not just say, oh, I ought not want this thing, but say, why is it that I want this thing inordinately? I mean, that's a very Augustinian way of thinking about it, right? Why do I want this thing in the order in which I want it? Not just should I or should I not want the thing, but why do I want it inordinately in this way, right?
That's excellent. Yeah, and it goes back to something I think Jim Jordan has said in the past about the sin in the garden, that the eating itself was not a sin. It was the order in which it was eaten. In other words, if Adam and Eve had lived faithfully, eventually God would have given him even that one tree. But it's the fact that they wanted it now, and their motivations led them to consume it now. So it's an order. There's a theology of order there, even in the garden, as there is also in our modern age, obviously, as you have brought to our attention. So there is, of course, a very high ethical implication here, and that is that death is becoming almost like a fast food industry, which leads me to think that living is also becoming a fast food industry. So if we die in a modernistic, consumeristic way, it's because we live in the same format, right?
Yeah, that's exactly so, right. Yeah.
Question that kind of arises from that observation is that, you know, the romanticized vision, which I tend to be very fond of walking into church on the Lord's Day and having to walk through a cemetery before you enter into the entrance of the building. It's a real beautiful vision where you live in the church and you literally die and are buried in the backyard or in the front yard, wherever the cemetery is laid. How can we as Christendom, as you mentioned, reshape the modern view of dying. And the implication of that is, how do we reshape the modern view of living? Because the reason we are so consumeristic when it comes to dying, to deal so poorly, which is, it's almost a revival of the kind of Gnosticism that was so prevalent in the early part of the church. And I think we've seen that today. Where do we begin to develop a non-consumeristic view of living?
Such a good question. You know, it hadn't occurred to me until you framed it exactly like that. But another fruitful avenue of thought would be the rise of consumeristic funerals with the rise of pornography. Because when we treat bodies as consumable things, the implication there is that they will be consumed, right? We're treating them just as instruments. I remember hearing Alistair Begg one time talk about like raising money for a building. And he made the point, it's always stuck with me. He said, the building campaign I want to lead at my church is to build a cemetery out back. And he said, you know, in an age where everybody is raising, you know, $2 million for the Northex or something, he said, I think it's just profoundly important that we have a cemetery out back. And I don't know that, I forget what his church name, Parkside or whatever, has a cemetery out back yet. But what I do know is that's a very Christian principle, that walking to church and having that, you know, what scripture calls a flower garden, right? That you're walking through. In other words, a place where these bodies are viewed as seeds and they will come back, has a profound view of how you view your own life, how you view the bodies of others, and how indeed you view yourself. And so I think these things are tied together. The other thing I'll say is that, you know, throughout history, death has been something that has always been tragic. We never want to say, well, this is just the natural part of life. It's always something that we grieve about, albeit with hope, but it's been a part of our lives. It's been something that, you know, you have wakes in your home. You go to wakes, you see the body. And it strikes me that that the West has very much relegated dying to an industry, such that we almost think we can sort of dust our hands of it, and it's taken out of sight. And it strikes me that that's not healthy. So yes, for practical ways, I mean, I'll say one, I think having an Ash Wednesday service every year is a really helpful antidote to consumerism, because it reminds us that we are from dust and we are heading to dust. Therefore, the eternal matters of life, we should leave Ash Wednesday aware of our smallness, yes, aware of our sin, yes, but also aware of the magnitude of eternity. And it should reprioritize the choices we make. Another article this week was in the Wall Street Journal. There's an article entitled How Your Expense Report Reveals Your Soul. And I didn't even read the article, but just based on the title, that is exactly right. Our expense report, our budget, our credit card statement reveals our soul. And if we are so hungry spiritually that we're, you know, running up large credit card debts, buying new clothes, new purses, new shoes, trips, trying to have experiences, it really does say something about the spiritual hunger in us. And again, going back to Augustine, that heart will be restless. There will not be a number of products that you will acquire. There won't be a number of iPhone that you can get that will quench that thirst. The heart will stay restless until it finds its rest in the one whom it was created to rest with, namely God, right?
For the church today, our job is to help, quote, sell the story of the gospel of Christ to a world consumed by a dismal fairy tale. We are to remind the world that its false euangelion, its false gospel of consumerism, will never deliver on its promise, but only in the true story can they find what they seek. It's to this storytelling that Christians have been called. And it is in this hope that the world may find the peace it is so desperately looking for. Dustin Messer, man, thanks for your time, and I hope we will live as the gospel commands of us, and I also hope we will die faithfully as the gospel commands of us. Thanks for your time,
brother. Well said. Thank you for having me, Reaper.